Today's shiur I'm dedicating to my father's memory. This is the 16th Yortzeit today, Harav Asher Aharon ben Avram Binyamin. And as promised in the last shiur, I wanted to begin by doing some conclusion about Perek Rishon. Ari, if you can get the door open. Ari, you can get the door. Thanks. Some wind-up things about Perek Rishon, because actually it's going to be something that's going to touch on our study of the second Perek, which we're going to do today. In Tanakh, often structure relates itself to meaning. And often the feeling, the underlying text, the subtext that's being communicated is informed by the structure. So as an example, two sessions ago when we talked about Eicha in general, I introduced you to the notion of kina meter, something that was actually discovered formally about 100 years ago, 50 years ago. And the idea is that in biblical poetry, meter is always balanced. So you have three stressed syllables or two stressed syllables on each side of the half of the text. In kina, it is deliberately not like that. And it's often three stressed syllables, and the second half will have two or one. So the fellow who discovered this came up with a theory, which is an interesting theory, that it gives you the feeling that the mourner is kind of running out of breath, is running out of ability to talk. It's kind of like you're expecting a third syllable and it's not there because like they're breathless. I think that there may be something else going on, and I mentioned this then, which is that the whole notion of a kina is that things are out of whack. Things are imbalanced. Things are not the way they're supposed to be. And therefore it's presented that way. However, there's far more to the structure of Megillat Eicha than just the meter that informs the feeling of the text. So if you take a look at page 4, which is the one-sided page, you can see that the entire first chapter is very clearly constructed as a chiasmus. And a chiasmus, again, is where the first verse or the first passage has something in common, maybe a common word or phrase, with the last passage, and then the second one has something in common with the second to last, and it builds like a pyramid. And the point of a chiasmus, which there are tons of these throughout Tanakh,
what's the version of the word chiasmus?
It's from the Greek letter chi, which is like this, an X. Okay. So it's ABBA. So the point of a chiasmus is to really draw attention to the middle. To the middle. And if you take a look on page 4, you could see how the first pasuk uses, for instance, the words rabati am, rabati bagoyim, and the same word rabot is used in the last pasuk. That's to create that parallel. And you could see all the way through, ein la menachem and ein menachem li, almost exact phrases, are used in the second pasuk and the second to last pasuk. And you can just see it all the way through that it's generated that way. If you recall, in the first parak that we saw last week, the middle of the chapter is where the shift takes place from the mikonein, the observer, the dirger, and the city itself crying. And so that shift seems to be sitting at the axis of this chiasmus. Now, another interesting thing about the structure, and this is unique to the first parak, is if you take a look at page 5, and I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, is that page 5 presents the perek in its usual layout of Sukkim Aleph all the way in order. As I mentioned then, there is another theory about the alphabet, which is that the alphabet, if you turn the page, you can see it, that the alphabet also may be starting in what we consider the middle. Now, if you stop and step back for a second, and something we talked about in the context of Pei-Ayin, there is no real inherent reason that an alphabet should have an order. There's no reason for an alphabet to have an order. The only real reason for an alphabet to have an order is for students writing. In other words, to practice so you have an order, so you remember how the order goes. But there's no inherent reason for A to be before B or B before C. And that's why we find all sorts of variations in students' writing exercises from the earliest things that we found, which is about 9th century BCE, all the way through to Second Temple period, when it starts to get stabilized. So, for instance, you find student writing exercises where they wrote from left to right. And
wait,
student writing...
Alphabet sometimes is numerologically...
That's a much later interpolation, yeah.
Okay.
That's not inherent in the alphabet. Remember, alphabet started as pictographs, where the picture looked like something. And so the Phoenician alphabet, which is what we use, it had images that looked like a thing, and that thing gave a sound. So, for instance, a wavy thing that looks like waves is called mem, because it's mime, and therefore it gives you the m sound. And a round circle is an ayin, because it looks like an eye. Right? And an ox is an aleph, because that's what an aleph ox is, so they go ah, so the ah sound. And therefore, all of them look like those images. And then, because of the impact of the Persian Empire, and as a result of that, us shifting to their Aramaic script, we went to what we call Hebrew script. But Hebrew, real Hebrew script, is the older one. And again, there's no reason for a particular order. So clearly, by the time that some of the texts that we have that are acrostic were put together, there was an order. But as you see, the order was a little bit vague. So, for instance, Pei and Ayin in Eicha get switched. But another component of it, and we have evidence of this from several different places, for instance, in Tehillim, Tet, and Yod. Tehillim, Tet, and Yod are clearly a continuum, because Tehillim, Tet is asking God to save us from the evil people, and Yod is thanking God for saving us from the evil people. The only problem is that it's not. Tehillim Tet is God thanking God for saving us from the evil people, and Tehillim Yod is asking God to save us from the evil people. So what happened? Both of them are acrostics. They're expanded acrostics, where it's Aleph and a few psukim later Bet and a few psukim later Gimel, but you can see it. The problem is that the Perek in which we ask God to save us from the evil people starts with the Lama Hashem Tamo Barachok, with the Lamed. It goes all the way to Tav. And the parak in which we thank God for saving us starts with Odeh, which is an Aleph. So what happened is at some point, evidently, they got shifted to fit the new alphabet that goes Aleph, Dureh, and then Lamed Mem Nun, which means Lamed Mem Nun was a potentially valid place to start an alphabet. And we actually have student writing exercises in which the alphabet starts at Lamed. It goes Lamed Nun Samach Pei Ayin Tzadik Kuf Resh Shin Tav Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet Rechav. Right? And the reason I'm pointing that out is because if you look at Perek Aleph on page 5, you could see Perek Aleph presented in the order that that we have. Aleph going through Tav. And it's the observer describing the city in its terrible pain, and then the city turns around and cries out. But flip the page and you'll see that it could be read just as well if you start with the Elementa, which means you start with the Lamed, in which the city begins talking to the passers-by. Why are you laughing at me? Why are you teasing? Why are you, et cetera? Why are you ignoring me, et cetera? And then the observer is driven to sing his dirges. And it can go both ways, and maybe it's deliberately given so that it can be read either way. And I have a little explanation at the bottom of the page for that. But as promised, we're going to be focusing on Perek Bet today, so let's take a look at Perek Bet. So Perek Bet, right? Perek Bet, which you have on page 7 now. Got another one of them. Again, another one back here. Possible? You take two? No. Okay. There you go. Again starts with the word Eicha. Again is 22 psukim. Again is 22 psukim in order. Again operates with kinam meter. So everything seems similar in structure to Perek Aleph. Of course, this is the first Perek where Pei and Ayin are inverted. We've talked about that. But let's take a look at the Perek, and you're going to see that the focus is very different. The focus, the theme, the actual content of the Perek is different than Perek Aleph. Perek Aleph focuses on the disconnect between Yerushalayim and her children, Yerushalayim and her allies. Her allies have all turned their backs on Yerushalayim. Her children are no longer. Her children are not coming to Yerushalayim. She sits alone and desolate. Perek Bet is much harsher. But I'm going to step back and ask a generic question, general question, which you're going to have to reassess every time. What is the purpose of this book? Or to put it a more appropriate form of the question, what is the motivation and the purpose of the Mikonen, of Yirmiyahu? What's he trying to accomplish here? In the first parak, he's describing the city and then giving the city a voice to describe her own pain. But what's he doing? What's he trying to accomplish? And let's read in this parak, and we're going to get a stronger sense of it. Again, Echa, and again, Echa meaning, how could it be? Echa Ya'iv be'apo Adonai bat Zion. Ya'iv, meaning to put it like a heavy cloud. He's either covering over Bat Zion with this heavy cloud of anger, or else the covering up would mean he's covering up and disappearing, which ends up being the same thing. He shlich mishamayim eretz tiferet Yisrael. He has cast down from the heaven all the way to the earth the glory of Israel. Tiferet Yisrael is a phrase used several times in Tanakh, for instance, that refers to the Beit HaMikdash. And this is only the second time in all of Eicha that there's a mention of the Mikdash, and here but there's been much more about the Mikdash in this parak. V'lo zachar hadom raglav b'yom apo. He forgot his ottoman, his footstool, on the day of his anger. What's his footstool? That's the Mikdash. And that's mentioned already in Shlomo's. Right, ha'aretz hadom raglav. The land is his footstool, but the idea is the Mikdash. Bila Adonai v'lo chamal. God has swallowed up without any compassion. By the way, important to note, what is the theology underpinning this parak? Let's see. Right, the belief about what we believe about God. Et kol ne'ot Yaakov. He's destroyed all the pastures, all the serene places of Yaakov. Haras be'evrato mivtzerei vat Yehuda. In his anger, he has destroyed all of the fortresses. Higiel ha'aretz. They've all fallen down, which seems to be an inversion on Yericho. Chilel mamlacha v'sareha. He has defamed or made profane the kingdom and all of its princes. These are supposed to be glorious. These are supposed to be mamlachet kohanim, and they become profaned. Yeah.
He's using three different names.
So gada b'chori af kol keren Yisrael. Now keren, which is a word we're all familiar with, which means a horn, also means a ray, but here means a horn, is used metaphorically throughout Tanakh for power. Harem keren mishichacha. Right? It doesn't mean his horn, it means his power. Right? So gada b'chariyav et keren, he's cut down the power of Israel. Now, this here we're entering into a very dicey theological area. When bad stuff happens to Am Yisrael, what does that mean? Does that mean that God is attacking? Or does that mean that God is just kind of loosening the protection and allowing the natural course of events to happen? Or does it mean that God is sort of pushing others to do this? And it's a huge difference in how you view it. Eicha takes all three positions in this parak. Just needs psukim. Take a look. Gada b'choriyav kol keren Yisrael, which means he's cut down our power. Heshiv achor yimino mnei oyev. He has pulled his right hand back in the presence of the enemy, which means his right hand that protected us, he's kept from us. And he has burned everything up around. So is he the active one? Or is he just removing his protection? The answer is all of the above. What are we accustomed to? We're accustomed to God's protection. We're not seeing it. So God's protection is gone. But now the sense is not just that he's removed his protection. He's actively the attacker. That's the sense. Darach kashto koyev. And I'm saying, you read this, and I don't understand how you can't go crazy if you just think about what it means. He has drawn his bow like an enemy. In other words, he's aiming his bow at us, his arrows at us. Nitzav yimino ketzar. And now the right hand that previously was just not protecting us is held up like an enemy. Vayarog kol machmadei ayin. He's destroyed all the precious ones. And that sounds like the children. Be'ohel Bat Zion, now Ohel Bat Zion is a reference to the Mikdash, the tent of Bat Zion. Shafach ka'esh chamato. His anger has come out like a fire. Now notice, he's not saying that it's fire. We're not talking about the actual fire, but that his anger is being spilled out like a fire. Keep in mind that word shafach, because it's going to come back as one example of the chiasmus of this parak, which is very prominent and clear, in a very delightful way. And it's hard to say delightful about any of this, but you'll see. Haya Adonai ke'oyev. You can imagine what that means. God is like an enemy. He's behaving like an enemy. Bila Yisrael. He has swallowed us up. Bila kol armenoteha. Now, what's armenoteha is a reference to the royalty, meaning the palaces. Shichet mivtzarav. And the fortresses are destroyed. Vayerev bevat Yehuda. Yerev meaning did a lot of. Harbei. Ta'aniya va'aniya. Mourning. He has created a lot of mourning among Yehuda. By the way, at this point, who is credited or blamed with all the destruction? God. And what's the reason for it?
He's angry.
He's angry. And is his anger justified? We don't hear that. And what's our role in it? We don't hear that. And keep that in mind, that the theology of Eicha Bet is one that we're not accustomed to hearing too often. Vayachmos kagan sukkah. And now God becomes like a gardener. And he rips down the sukkah. Sukkah meaning like the branches. Right? He rips them down. Shichet mo'ado. Now mo'ado here seems to be a reference to the ohel mo'ed. Shikach Adonai b'tzion mo'ed v'shabbat. And that's the play. Mo'ed is both a place, an appointed place, and appointed time. God has caused the mo'ed and shabbat to be forgotten. Because without the mikdash. Vayin'atz b'zaham apol melech v'kohen. And in his anger, he has rejected the melech v'kohen. All of the leadership.
Which Shabbat?
Moed v'shabbat seems to be just like it is in Yeshayahu Aleph, in the weekly Shabbat. Zanach Adonai mizbecho ni'er mikdasho. God has rejected his own mizbeach, his own mikdash. He's gir biyad oyev chomot amenoteha. And he has handed over the walls, the protecting walls, to his enemies. Kol natnu b'veit Adonai kiyom moed.
To God's enemies?
What?
To his enemies.
To our enemy. The enemy okay. has been given the control over the walls. What does that mean? Kol natnu b'veit Adonai kiyom moed. It can go two different ways. Whose voice is this? So some understand that it means the voice of the enemy. The enemy is cheering, just like we celebrate in the Mikdash B'Yom Moed. But there's a very famous passage at the end of Ezra Gimel. Everybody's familiar with the passage. That when the Mikdash was rebuilt, the young people who had never seen the Mikdash were cheering and they were excited. And the old people who remembered the Mikdash were weeping. And the pasuk goes out of its way to say you could not distinguish between the weeping and the laughing. So it could be that this voice is the voice of the people crying, but it was just as loud as the celebration. So the same kind of level of power of sound, but of course for a very different reason. Yeah.
Is there any type of progression to this?
Yeah, let's see the whole thing. Let's see the whole thing. It is, but you have to see you have to see four prakim to see it. Chashav Adonai lahashchit chomat batzion. What does chashav here mean? Chashav means decided. God has decided to destroy. And what this means is that from the theological perspective of this parak, if it has happened, it means God decided it's going to happen. It's not just that it let it happen. This is God's decree. Natakav. Now, a kav is an interesting thing because a kav is like a peles, balance. You use it in building. You put it on top of like a wall to make sure the wall is exactly even. So he put a kav. Now, a kav is usually used, kav mishkolet, is usually used for construction. Here he put it to measure, to destroy. Lo hishiv yadomi balaya. He didn't pull himself back from destruction. Vayavel chel v'choma yachdavum lalu. Chel v'choma. Chel is the ramparts and the choma is the wall. The ramparts the part inside the wall where the soldiers stand. You can shoot arrows at the enemy. Right? So chel v'choma yachdavum lalu. They were destroyed together. And destroyed together means God set out to destroy them. Now, step back a second and ask, because we're almost halfway through the parak, what is the Mekonein trying to accomplish by describing not only the terrible destruction, but putting it squarely in God's deliberate hands. God shooting arrows at us. God taking aim at us. Let's see. Tav'u v'aretz sha'areha. Her gates have sunk into the ground. And again, kind of an image of Yericho turned inside out. Ibed v'shibar b'richeha. He destroyed the bolts. In other words, any way to protect the city from people coming in was lost. Malkah v'sareha v'goyim ein Torah. Now, have to remember, the destruction of the city takes place in the summer of 586 BCE. But the proper king, as it were, and the elite, and the aristocracy, and the artisans, etc., were all exiled 11 years earlier. So Malkah v'sareha v'goyim ein Torah can be a reflection of the fact that the city's already been bereft of Torah. There's a very famous Gemara that says, Kevan shegalu Yisrael imcha bitul Torah gadol mizeh. That for, once Am Yisrael goes into exile, leaves Eretz Yisrael, there's no greater bitul Torah than that. And so, and they get it from this pasuk. They're out among the nations, there's no Torah. Gam nevi'eha lo matzu chazon me'adonai. And her prophets aren't getting any vision. Now, this, of course, coming from Yirmiyahu, is very poignant. Because what was Yirmiyahu's entire kampf throughout his career? Was against the other prophets who were all giving false prophecy and saying, sign a treaty with Egypt, rebel against Bavel, it's all good, you're going to be in Bavel for only a year or two, you're going to come back, etc., as opposed to Yirmiyahu saying, you got to accept Bavel, and we're going to be in Bavel for a while, in the famous letter he wrote. So he's could be referring to those Nevi'a Sheker. Yeshvu la'aretz yidmu zignei v'atzion. And by the way, there's only one voice so far. The voice is the Mekoneh. The city has not spoken. The elders of Batzion, again Batzion being Yerushalayim, all sitting on the ground silently. He'alu afar arosham. This is all signs of mourning. In Tanakh, by the way, we haven't seen this practice, but in Tanakh, one of the signs of mourning is dirt on your head. Chagru sakim. They put on sackcloth. Horidu la'aretz roshan betulot Yerushalayim. And the betulot Yerushalayim, which means the young women of Yerushalayim, who normally are always actually associated with celebration, with dancing. But to all Yerushalayim have put their heads down in mourning. The whole city is mourning. The Zekenim and the Betulot. There's always those kind of the two images of glory and happiness. And this is what they're doing. Kaluva d'ma'ot einai. Oh, now who's talking? My eyes are out of tears. This could be the Mekoneh, and I don't think so. I think this is the city now. Chomar merum me'ai. My insides are churning. Nishpach la'aretz kvedi al shever batami. My insides have poured out because of the destruction of my nation. Be'atef olel v'yonek. And this is the image that you got to keep in your head. Watching little babies fainting b'chovot kiryah, in the streets of the city. Fainting because of starvation. And this all cuts to before the destruction, the 2.5 years of siege. And terrible the description of the siege. Li'imotam yomru. What did these little kids say to their moms? Aye dagan vayayin. Where is the bread? Where is the wine? Bit'atfam kichalal berchovot ir. They're fainting like corpses in the cities of the in the street city streets of the city, in the really squares. Bishtafech nafsham. As they pour out their souls to their mothers. They're crying, please, mommy, give me food. Right? And imagine this picture. And now the Mekoneh speaks back to the city. Ma'aidech, ma'adamelach about Yerushalayim. How can I compare anything? There's no model for your suffering, which is what you often do. After all, what is it we say to a mourner? What's the phrase we say? We say, betoch sharei tzion, you're not alone. And sometimes, may not be the best idea, and sometimes it is, we share experiences from our own loss to kind of help them understand that there's someone to speak to. I don't have anything to compare this to. Ma'ashvelach l'nechamech. What can I compare it to bring you nechama? Betulat batzion. Ki gadol kayam shivrech mir palach. Your destruction is as big as the sea. As big as the sea and scary as the sea. Nevi'aya chazulach shavetafel. And now Yirmiyahu takes direct aim at the Nevi'im. It says, your Nevi'im saw what they described was without taste, meaning it was not real. V'lo gilu al avonech la'shiv shvutech. And they did not tell you about your sin. Had they been honest with you and told you about your sin, you might have done tshuva. Ve'chazulach masot shav maduchim. Rather, they envisioned all sorts of other things that were not true. Safku alayach kapayim kol over derech. And now what had happened? Everybody who's passing you by is hitting their hands. Sharku vayanir rosham. They're whistling and shaking their heads. And they're making fun of this city. Albat Yerushalayim. Hazot ha'ir shiomru klilat yofi mesos kol l'chol ha'aretz. Could this be the city? This is Eicha. Could this be the city that we say is the most beautiful city in the world? Klilat yofi? The accumulation of all the beauty? This city? Your enemies are opening their mouths to you, but opening their mouths like in a degrading way, in a teasing way, an insulting way. Sharku ve'achraku shein. They're whistling, which, by the way, in Tanakh, whistling is always a sign of degradation. And ve'achraku shein means they're like chomping at their teeth, almost like they're about to chow down on you. Amru bilanu. They're saying, this is the day we're waiting for. We found it. Yerushalayim is down. So far, God is only described as an enemy, and nobody's talking to God here. Asa Adonai Asher Zamam. You have to hear what the pain in this pasuk is. Where does this phrase come from? Because Yirmiyahu is borrowing from the Torah. Where does this phrase come from? Edim zomim. And what's the punishment for conspiring witnesses? Va'asitem lo kasher zamam. You do to him what he conspired. Here, God has done what he conspired. In other words, this isn't a mistake. God sat and deliberated and conspired and now I'm going to get those people, and he did it. Bitzayim rato asher tzivam mekerem. And now we're starting to get some justification. He has fulfilled the words that he said many, many years ago. In other words, if you don't listen. Haras v'lo chamal, he destroyed without compassion. V'yisamach alayich oyev hirim keren sarayich. And remember, he's broken our horn, he's raised the horn of our enemy. Tza'ak libam el Adonai. They've cried out to God. Chomat batzion, horidi chanachal dima yomam v'layla. And so now, he turns to the city. And he says, you should be weeping like a river, day and night. Al tinit fugat lach. Don't break. Don't give it a break. Don't give it a rest. You should be weeping nonstop. Al tidom batenech. Remember beforehand, the city said, I'm all out of tears? He said, don't be out of tears. Don't stop. And by the way, the city, honestly, is buildings. So who's he talking to? Yirmiyahu's got an audience. And he's having a feigned conversation with the city. This is consistent throughout Shira, where the Meshorer speaks to the heavens, speaks to a rock, speaks to the earth, speaks to the sunrise, right? In order to motivate the audience. He's telling the city, don't stop weeping. Weep and don't stop weeping. Kumi roni balayla. Get up and sing. But the singing is painful, singing at night. L'rosh ha'shmurot, meaning at the beginning of the night watch. Shivchi chamayim libech. Now remember what we said earlier? God has cast out his anger like fire, spilled it like fire. Here, spill out your heart like water. And there's a subtle thing here, is that maybe you can extinguish the fire. Nochach pnei Adonai. Call out to God. Face God. He's talking to the city. Well, buildings aren't going to talk to God. So who's he really talking to? He's talking to his audience. What's he trying to get them to do? There's no tshuva here. That's not what he says. What is that? Cry out to God. Because what are they doing right now? They're traumatized. They're paralyzed. Shocked. Good point. Si'i elav kapayich. Raise up your hands to him. We'll see in the third paragraph where that phrase comes up again. Al nefesh olalayich. You know, you want a reminder? Let me remind you about your little kids who died in your arms. Is that good enough to give you a kick? Ha'atufim berav rosh kol chutzot. The ones who are fainting from hunger.
Is he showing a historical precedent for this idea?
No. He's trying to tell them, you should cry, and I'm going to push you to cry. You need to cry. He's trying to wake them up out of the stupor.
Why would they believe him?
What?
Why do they believe him?
Believe him what?
That this is the method to.
He's not creating. He's not presenting an argument.
He's trying to get them to do something.
Right. He's not presenting an argument. There's nothing to believe.
He's not doing it directly.
He's not saying to them, this is why you... He's just saying, cry out. It's an emotional tug. Okay. There's nothing to believe. Re'e Adonai v'habita. L'mi olal tako. And there's a deliberate play on words here. Olel is a little baby. It's the olalim who are dying in their mother's arms. And olel is to act, to do. Because the two, of course, are related. That's what you create, little kids. L'mi olal tako. L'mi olal tako. God, who did you do this to? Im tochal na nashim piryam olalei tipuchim. This is a phrase that we have in Vayikra. For mothers to eat their own children, which of course is the most horrific scene of a siege. Im yehareg b'mikdash Adonai kohen v'navi. Now, im pshat, this seems to be talking about terrible things that are happening, that kohanim and nevim are being killed by the enemy, and little kids are dying, and mothers are eating their own kids. These just horrific scenes. There's a famous midrash that ties this in with a story that we have in Divrei Hayamim Bet about a particular Zechariah Navi, not the famous Zechariah. Zechariah ben Yehuda Navi was a Kohen who is in the Mikdash, and the king commands that he be killed in the Mikdash because he doesn't like what he's saying. But the simple read of this is, because we're not talking now about sins, we're talking about tragedies. Because we're comparing little kids dying in their, being eaten by their own parents because of the siege, and Kohanim and Nevi'im being killed in the Mikdash. Shachvu la'aretz chutzot nar v'zaken. The old and the young are all lying out there. V'tulotayu v'achurai naflu b'charev. And the young ones have all been killed by the sword. Now, is this description pre-siege? Doesn't seem like it. Is it during the siege? Or is it after the destruction? It seems like it's after the destruction because he's describing actual war. But nonetheless, much of the powerful imagery comes from during the siege and the terrible hunger. Haragta biyom apecha tavachta lo chamalta. And now just straight up to God. You killed. And again, at no point is there justification in here. It's not chet chata Yehuda, which is on the first parak. God, you have aimed at us with your arrows. You've torn everything down. You've plotted this. You're an enemy to us. So what's the Mokonen trying to do? He's trying to get the people to cry out. And even if the crying out is just, why did you do this? Not Ashamnu Bagannu. That's the first step you got to take. You got to get out of the paralysis. Tikra chiyom moed megurai misaviv. You know what? You made it like a yontif, like a moed, a set time. All of your enemies, okay. And okay, today's Rosh Chodesh, in 2 weeks, everybody come around and destroy your shrine. Kiyom Moed. V'lo haya b'yom af Adonai palit v'sarid. So this, Yom af Hashem, the day of God's anger. No refugees, no remnants, nobody was left. Everybody's destroyed. Now that's, of course, an exaggeration, because he's talking. The ones that I raised, the ones that I brought up, the enemies destroyed all of them. That's the end of the parak. If you hand this parak to somebody in English or somebody who knows Hebrew and say, this is what the Jewish reaction to tragedy is, you will have a very different conclusion than you would get from any drasha, any Moser Shmuz, and most of Chazal. You have to ask, why is this way? Why is the Mekonen here presenting a picture of our relationship with God that seems to be missing the critical point, which is our contribution to this and our culpability here? I think the most reasonable explanation is because we're at an early stage in recovering from shock. We haven't recovered from shock yet. We're still in shock. You have to remember, the people of Yerushalayim were absolutely convinced God will never destroy his house. Look at Yirmiyahu Zion. He's never going to destroy his own house. This will never happen to us. And by the way, there was no history of it ever happening, so we have nothing to rely on. When this happens, we're in absolute shock. One way of saying it is, their God's bigger than our God, the Mitzrayim model. The other way is, the Eliyahu model, inverted. God went to sleep. That's not what happened. If this happened, it's because God took aim at us. And God did this to us. And that's our address. So if right now all you can do is scream out to him, what have you done? Why are you doing this? That's the start. And perhaps the mayim of your heart pouring out can extinguish the ash that poured out from God. As a start. But this is not the end of the Megillah. That's why you have to wait until you see Perek Dalad to see where the Megillah is leading us to. And Perek K has its own separate function. So Mirza Hashem, next week we're going to look at Perek Gimel, which is seems to be, but it's not really much longer than the other Perekim. And we'll see at the unique function of Perek Gimel. It takes things in a very, very different direction. I have one other thing just to hand out, which is to show you that that this chapter also is built, I'm just taking home to take a look at it, is built really as a somewhat perfect chiasmus, demonstrating again that that middle, now remember the middle is when the city speaks up for two psukim, the exact middle, the chaf and the lam psukim are where the city speaks up, and then the observer now is able to get to the standard of the city. Now why is that? Because you've gone through a shock. Think about the first hour of 9/11. You couldn't talk. I could sit there and say to you, this is what's happened, this is what's happened, this is what's happened. Until you open your mouth and say, I can't cry anymore. Until you can open your mouth and say something, I got no hope. So what are the first 10 psukim in the parak? The observer, the mekonein, talking about how terrible it is. And using terrible terms. God has pointed his arrows at us, etc. For me, that's that vision is just like terrible. And he's doing that for one purpose, to get the city to talk. I'm all out of tears. I can't cry anymore. The little kids in the street looking to their mother for food and dying in their mother's arms. I can't take it anymore. I say, fine. Mission one accomplished, which is I got the city to talk. Now I got to get the city to cry. And that's the next 10 psukim. So we got 10 psukim in the beginning. We got two in the middle where the city talks and basically says, I can't cry anymore. And the next 10 psukim are where the mekonein ramps it up. Even further, makes it more devastating in order to push the city to cry. The city is not yet ready to cry. We'll get there. But next week we're going to see another device, another technique that the Mekonein is going to try to use in order to get the city to do what it needs to do. And again, when I say the city, what it really means is the people. The city becomes a personalization of the people, Ha'anashah, the people, in order to effectively speak to them without them feeling like they're talking, he's talking at them. It becomes a little bit safer.
It's a big therapy session.